In short, I missed him. Too much to trust myself to go back to Boston. Too much to breathe. Mom reached and gathered me to her chest, dropping a kiss on my head.
Yes, you will know when something is eating at your child. And I hope they will tell you what it is that's eating them so maybe you can help. As it happens, I raised two fiercely independent girls. You more than your sister. You were always such a spitfire. You helped Persephone before I could get to her, with school, with homework, with her social life. You've already been a parent in some ways. You're going to be a wonderful mother, Belly Bell, and you are going to realize the most depressing secret of all.
Hmm? I asked, nuzzling into her shirt.
You're only as happy as your least happy child.
She dropped another kiss on my head.
Confide in me, Belle.
I can handle it, Mom. She pulled away from me, holding my shoulders, her eyes boring into mine.
Then do, honey. Don't run from whatever it is. Face it head on, because whatever happens, it's not just you who you have to think about now.
I pressed my hand against my stomach. Baby Whitehall kicked in response.
I got you, girl.
20 minutes after my mother went to the farmer's market to meet with her bridge friends, my youth shriveled into itself just thinking about it. I picked up the empty watermelon bowl and pushed the screen door open, slipping back inside. The house was blistering hot since the air conditioner died a few days before and had yet to be repaired. There was a gaping, sewer-sized hole at the back of the house, waiting to be fixed. The place felt strange to me, still. Even though it was not chronologically new, it seemed that way. It had yet to shape itself around its occupants and was bare of memories, nostalgia, and those home scents that transported you back to your childhood. I rinsed the bowl, thinking about what Mom had said, dealing with my problems. The last couple days brought me clarity. I didn't want $1 million. I wanted Devin. And I was tired of running away from whoever was after me. I needed Devin to help me with that. Yes, I finally realized I needed help. I couldn't do this on my own, and strangely enough, it didn't feel too terrible admitting that to myself. Maybe I was growing up from the girl Mr. Lockin had left to bleed out all those years ago. The front door opened and shut, and the house filled with my dad's whistles. John Penrose could whistle any song that came out between 1967 and 2000 from start to finish. He was good at it, too. When Percy and I were young, we'd play Name That Tune. Sometimes I let her win, but not often.
Honeys, I'm home.
He appeared in the kitchen, tall and broad and still kind of handsome, in a more wrinkled, less defined Harrison Ford kind of way. He dropped canvas bags full of lemons on the counter next to me, grinning at me ear to ear.
Hello, sunshine.
He pressed a kiss to my forehead, hiked his belt up, what was beginning to look like a dad bod more than a father figure belly, and swung the fridge door open on the hunt for his evening beer.
Where's your mama?
Out. I leaned against the counter, drying my hands with a towel. I didn't tell him where she went. To this day, I withheld information about my mother from my father, trying to make her appear more mysterious and alluring. There was little point to this exercise. She was an open book to him. Always honest, straightforward, and available. She was all the things I didn't want to be. He never questioned her love for him. Dad closed the fridge, popping open his Bud Light, settling against the opposite counter.
What's up, kiddo? How's that baby growing?
He took a pull of his beer. Fix it, Mom's voice urged in my head. Here went nothing, and its best friend, nada. You cheated on Mom. The words came out so mundane, so plain, I'd laugh at how easy it was to say them. The smile on my father's face remained intact.
Excuse me?
You cheated on Mom, I repeated, suddenly feeling my pulse everywhere. My neck, my wrists, behind my eyelids, in my toes. Don't try to deny it. I saw you.
You saw me?
Dad put his beer down on the counter, folding his arms across his chest, ankles crossed.
When and where, if I may ask? We don't exactly hang in the same circles.
He sounded amused more than he was worried, but there was no trace of aggression in his voice. In yours and Mom's bed? A lady with dark red hair? I mean, I say a lady, but what I really mean is a skank. Back in Southie? And just like that, the blood drained from his face. He looked pale, grave, scared.
Amabel,
he breathed.
That was
15 years ago, I finished for him. Yeah.
How?
Came home early from school and walked in on you. I didn't tell you because I was scared, but I saw her on top of you. I heard you whisper her name. And I never forgot. So tell me, Dad, how's Sophia doing these days? Sophia. The woman I was sure I saw in supermarkets and parks and on the escalators at Target. The harlot who ruined my parents' marriage without my mom even knowing about it. Some nights I'd lain awake in bed. I thought I could murder her. Other nights I wondered what made her the way she was, what made her seek pleasure with an unavailable man. He looked around him now, seeming lost all of a sudden, like we'd just been transported back to the room where it happened.
I don't know. I haven't been in touch with her in years. Years.
He reached behind him to grab the counter and knocked his beer down on the floor. The glass bottle broke, yellow-white liquid running like a golden river between us. How many years? I asked.
15.
Don't lie to me, John.
10.
He closed his eyes, swallowing hard.
I haven't seen her in 10 years.
He'd been with her until I was 21. This wasn't a fling. It was an affair. Of course it was. He wouldn't have brought his fling over to his house. Why? I asked. I wanted to know what was missing in his life. Mom was gorgeous, loyal, and sweet. Percy and I were good kids. Sure, we had stuff. Everyone had stuff. Money issues, Mom losing her sister to cancer, those sorts of things. Life things. Things we went through together.
Why did I cheat on your mother?
He looked perplexed. Yes, I want to know. Neither of us made a move to clean up the mess on the floor. He rubbed the back of his neck, pushing off the counter and starting to pace back and forth. I followed him with my gaze.
Look, it wasn't so easy back then, okay? From the moment your mama quit her job to take care of you two and your Aunt Tilda, may she rest in peace, I wasn't just the breadwinner, I was the sole provider of the family, and there were medical bills and a fridge to fill, mouths to feed, insurance and a mortgage to pay. Percy had ballet classes and you had track. Things added up and I just...
He stopped, flinging his arms helplessly in the air.
I was sinking, going under, deep. Your mother didn't want to touch me. I felt too guilty to even ask. She was watching her sister disappear little by little. I felt like an employee of the household more than the man of it. And then came Sophia.
I'm guessing there's a pun there, I muttered sarcastically. He ignored my barb.
Sophia and I worked in the same office building. At first, we took lunches together. It was innocent.
I'm sure. I smiled, surprised to find out I was as bitter as I'd be if it had happened to me. If it were Devon. Devon is not yours. Devon is getting married to another woman, probably in the next few months. Apologize profusely and tear the check into tiny pieces or move on with your life.
She was going through a messy divorce,
Dad explained. Cordial divorces are hard to come by, I quipped. And the fact you did it in Mom's bed. Ballsy. There's a pun there, too, by the way.
Amabel,
he chided softly.
Believe it or not, I did it there because a part of me wanted to get caught. Give me a chance to speak.
Begrudgingly, I pursed my lips, allowing him to go on.
I was there for her, and she was there for me. She was a mess. I was falling apart.
Throughout all this, your mother and I had drifted apart until I could no longer remember what it felt like to be her partner, her lover. But it was complicated. I still loved your mom. I wanted to believe I'd get her back eventually. Our love was just on hold. What in the ever-loving fuck was this man talking about? Love wasn't something you could put a pin in and get back to later. It wasn't a goddamn follow-up email you could schedule in advance. The timeline suggests otherwise, I attempted a sardonic smile. Auntie Tilda died in my early teens. Dad broke up with Sophia when I was 20. Life has a way of setting the pace, he admitted. Bending to pick up the large pieces of glass from the floor, he looked at them like he wanted to stab his own neck. I wish I were so forgiving to myself about my actions, I mumbled. I'm not forgiving to myself. I've hated myself for a long time. I tried to break up with Sophia numerous times after your aunt passed away, and sometimes I even succeeded, but she always came back. And sometimes I let her in, whenever your mother and I had issues. You're a sack of shit. The words coming out of my mouth stunned me. Not because they didn't make guest appearances every now and then. Profanity and I were close friends, but because they'd never been directed at a family member before. Family was something sacred. Until now. I was, he agreed. But finally, 9 years into the affair, I managed to escape her. I quit my job. I changed the locks on our house. I told her if she got anywhere near your mother or tried to tell her, I'd make her life miserable. Nice. He threw the glass into the trash can under the sink, poking at the rest of it with his boot. If you knew all this time, why didn't you tell your mother? What makes you think I didn't? She'd have killed me. Dad popped his upper body into the pantry and returned with a mop to clean up the beer, his eyes clinging to my face the entire time. Then left me. Not in that order. I let out a huff. As if. What do you mean? He started mopping. Mom never would have left you. That's why I didn't tell her. I bit out, my voice carried by emotions like they were the wind, gaining altitude, becoming a storm. The reason I didn't tell her all these years wasn't altruistic. It's not because I wanted to protect her. I was worried she'd stay and I wouldn't be able to look her in the eye. That I would be so deeply disappointed in her, so upset with her decision, it would affect our relationship. By not trusting her decision, I robbed her of the ability to make one. Yes, she would. Dad stopped mopping, pressing his forehead to the tip of the mop stick. He closed his eyes. She would have walked away. She was tempted to do it regardless of my infidelity. His head sloped forward, his shoulders sagging, and then he started crying, lowering himself on the floor in front of me. His knees sank into the golden river of beer. My dad never cried. Not when my aunt died, or when my grandparents passed away, or even when he watched Persephone walk down the aisle, ushered by the brother of the groom because Dad had had leg surgery and couldn't walk. He wasn't a crier. We weren't criers, yet here he was, weeping.
I'm sorry, Belly Bell. I'm so sorry. I've never been sorrier for a thing in my life. I cannot even imagine what it felt like for you to find out that way.
It was terrible. But oddly, maybe not as terrible as seeing him like this. I mean, a part of me still hated him for the distorted picture of partnership he'd ingrained in me, but he was also the person who took care of us, who bought me everything I wanted within his ability and helped pay off my student debt. He was one of my investors when I opened Madame Mayhem, and he once punched a man in the face for propositioning me while we were all vacationing on the Cape. He never locked me in dumbwaiters or was abusive or neglectful. He fucked up, but he never intended to fuck me up.
If it makes you feel any better, I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't even function for a long time after Sophia and I ended things. And after a couple of years, I told your mother.
Wait, Mom knows? I grabbed the hem of his plaid shirt and hoisted him up so we were at eye level. His eyes were puffy with tears, bloodshot. But you said she'd have left you if I told her.
She did leave me.
She never told me.
Do you tell her everything?
He caught my gaze meaningfully, arching an eyebrow. Fair point. He rubbed his knuckles against his cheek.
She kicked me out of the house shortly after you graduated college. By then, you and Percy were out of the house. I think she waited until you both left because she didn't want to traumatize you. I rented an apartment 2 blocks down for 8 months, trying to win her back.
Go, Mom, I mumbled. I hope she got some.
She had a 2-month affair with a yoga instructor at the local YMCA. After we got back together, I got so mad just driving past the YMCA, I vowed to move us away from that entire zip code to escape that memory.
This is why you moved to the burbs? He nodded. Why'd she take you back? I realized I was still holding his shirt, but that did not deter me from clutching harder.
Something very inconvenient happened to her.
What?
She remembered she was in love with me, and by being away from me, she was punishing not only me, but herself, too.
I let go of his shirt, staggering back. My yearning for Devin welled inside me. Wasn't that what I was doing? Punishing both of us because I couldn't handle the prospect of being in love? Of putting my trust in someone else? My parents' relationship was far from perfect. It was littered with disloyalties, bad years, and other people. But it still worked.
I hope that in time you'll forgive me,
Dad said.
But just in case you don't, let me assure you, Belly Bill, I will never forgive myself.
I needed time to think. Thanks for the talk. I'm going to go ahead now and scream into my pillow for a while, I announced, grabbing a bag of chocolate-covered pretzels from the pantry on my way up to the guest room. I was still wearing my canary yellow swimsuit. I stopped by the stairway, holding the railings for dear life as I twisted my head back to look at him. He was still standing in the same spot in the open-plan kitchen. One more question? I cleared my throat.
Yes?
What was so wrong with Sophia? I bit out. Why was she so fucked up?
She couldn't have any children,
he said gravely.
That was what was wrong with her. That's why her husband left her. He married another woman 3 months later and went and fathered 3 sons.
Poor Sophia gave up on love, too. And in the end, she lost. Maybe that's what losing was, giving up on love. Chapter 35. Belle, 18 years old. It's a weird thing, obsession. Sometimes it's fantastic. Sometimes it's horrible. Take artists, for instance. They're obsessed with their work, aren't they? The Rolling Stones, the Beatles, Spielberg. They work their butts off to ensure every note, every word in a script, every shot is perfect. That takes obsession. Then there are other obsessions. Take me, for instance. I cruised through my teenage years harboring a dark, horrible secret. My cross-country coach sexually abused me, then raped me. I ended up having a miscarriage because of all the stress and trauma he put me through. See? Now, this obsession is not so good. I've spent the last 3 years plotting my revenge, and the day has finally arrived. I've been keeping tabs on Steve Locken throughout the years. He moved away from Boston to Rhode Island to start fresh. Brenda left him shortly before she gave birth to their second son, Marshall. Brenda is back in New Jersey now and is married to a guy named Pete. They have a daughter together. She seems happy. Or as happy as one can be after what her ex put her through. I know Locken doesn't see his sons often, that he started working at a local school in Rhode Island and that he has a girlfriend named Yamima. And I know that he is still sexually abusing young girls. This is what obsessive people do. They dig and dig and dig until their fingernails are gone and their flesh is raw. I sniff around, get into the social media sites of some of the girls on his team. They post about him. They share pictures of him. They have secret groups about him. One even bragged to her friends that she jerked him off after assembly one day. In broad daylight, they were so horny for each other. In other words, my conscience is clear. Steve Locken doesn't deserve to live. This is where it gets a little dicey. I've never killed a person before, but I spent the last 3 years of my life going to Krav Maga classes 3 times a week, and I take my dad's Glock 22 to the woods, where I shoot tin cans lined up on logs. Massachusetts has crazy gun laws, but my dad used to work in law enforcement before he got his office job. The Glock sits in my purse right now as I drive down to Rhode Island. It's a nice summer day, only days before I head off to college. I know Yamima, Steve's girlfriend, is out of town at a conference. She's a realtor, and while at the conference, she is sharing a room with her colleague, Brad, who is dumb enough to allude to this on his Facebook profile. What comes around goes around. Steve is alone at home. He drinks 2 beers every night in front of the sports channel. I've watched him carefully all summer break, hiding behind the bushes of his beautifully restored Craftsman house after telling my parents I was pulling double shifts at a burger shack to save for college. Steve has no cameras installed anywhere around the house. One day, I overheard him telling Yamima that all of those cameras are connected to the internet, and he doesn't want anyone hijacking tapes of what's going on in his house. Steve gets up every morning at 5:45 and is out the door for an 8-mile run by 6. So today, when he slips out, I slither in. When his garage door rolls shut after he leaves the neighborhood in his car on the way to the trail where he runs, I sneak in. I open each Corona premium bottle in his garage fridge and pour crushed Ambiens and a little rat poison into them, screwing a bottle capper I brought with me to make them appear new and turning them upside down. When I get to Steve's suburban neighborhood again, it's almost midnight. I round the Craftsman house, trudging through the thick bushes circling his pool. I can see him through the double glass doors of his living room, passed out from the drinks and the Ambien. I carefully pick at the lock of the door, my gloves and balaclava intact, watching him intently in case he wakes up. He doesn't. I push the door open and head straight to him. He is sprawled on a maroon couch, a football game rerun playing in front of him. I snap a glove off and place an index finger under his nose, feel the heavy breeze of his breathing. Not dead yet. Shame. I'm not going to use the gun if I don't have to. Too messy, and I don't want to get in trouble. Instead, I'm going to make it look like an accident. Steve always said that a bad attitude was like a flat tire. One can't get super far before changing it. So I put my big girl pants on, think about it from all angles, and come up with a plan. I squat down, picking up Steve's head. It is heavy and hard in my hands. Of course, I want to do it like in the movies, tie him to a chair and throw our past between us, spit in his face and punch him, make him cry and beg and piss his pants, all while swaggering off in 5-inch stilettos. But I cannot afford to get caught. Not when I'm trying to piece my life back together. I may never forgive men for being men. That ship has sailed. I will never marry. Never fall in love, never give another person with a dick a chance, but I can still carry on. With his head firmly in my hands, I angle his body to a slumped position and calculate what it'd look like if he accidentally fell on the glass coffee table in front of him. The next few minutes is a lot of me moving his limp body back and forth on the couch and turning the coffee table slightly to ensure his head meets its sharp edge. Then I walk behind the sofa, grab Steve by the shoulders, and hurl his body forward with force. His head smashes on the edge of the coffee table. Glass shatters. His face is all cut up, but I can't see it because he is lying there face down. There's blood everywhere. So much blood. He still doesn't move, not even a flinch, and I suspect he wasn't aware of dying. He was so deeply unconscious. My heart twists in disappointment. So I tell myself that even if he didn't know he paid for what he did, at least he won't be able to do it to anyone else. Goodbye, bastard. Hope Satan gets you. I slide out unnoticed and make my way back to Boston. To my new life. To the new me.
Chapter 36. Devon. Mr. Whitehall, your vehicle awaits. I fell into the back seat of the eye-catching vehicle and continued barking at Sam Brennan during our transatlantic phone call. You said Simon came highly recommended. I was aware I sounded one, accusatory, two, clipped, and three, utterly deranged. He is a fucking joke, period. Where was he when Belle got attacked? When she was followed? I felt like a helicopter mother trying to convince an AP teacher why her Mary Sue should get the Scholar Award this year. My complete transformation from a man of leisure and pragmatist to this hysterical, illogical, blubbering mess was not lost on me. The young driver settled in the driver's seat of the Rolls-Royce Phantom. Mum loved to parade it around whenever she thought the paparazzi were nearby. I wagered she thought the paparazzi were definitely looking for me. She had no idea I'd come here to verbally bash her back and forth on the floor a la Hulk and deliver some very bad news to her. She thought I'd arrive bearing an engagement announcement. He was exactly where he was supposed to be, Sam countered efficiently. In Madame Mayhem, the only jurisdiction he was allowed to cover under your contract. Did you want him to stalk her? Yes. No, I scoffed, flicking invisible dirt from under my fingernail. The driver crawled from Heathrow Airport into the unbearable London traffic. I loved my capital city, but it had to be said, everything west of Hammersmith should have been trimmed away from London limits and duly given to Slough as a gift. But he was conveniently absent each time she got into trouble. He was doing the fucking filing to find excuses to be near her. This is a highly trained former CIA agent. Sam's fist crashed into an object on the other end of the line, shattering it to pieces. I pulled my phone away from my ear and scowled at it. I had recently, and by recently I mean in the past 10 minutes, decided I was no longer a smoker. There was simply no justification to engage in such a harmful habit. My unborn child deserved more than an increased chance at developing asthma and a house that smelled like a strip club. At any rate, I said coolly, I want to know where she is right now. What do your men have for me? Make it good. She's at her parents'. And she's safe. She hates her dad, I mumbled, a fact that wasn't intended for his ears. I was worried. Not about Belle being unhappy with the situation. The little wench deserved a bit of trouble after what she'd put me through. But for her father's safety. Daddy issues, huh? Sam chuckled darkly. Couldn't have seen that from miles away. Bugger off. Not sure what it means, but right back at you, mate. He volleyed with an unfortunate yet bizarrely accurate Australian accent. Wrong nationality, wanker. Make sure she doesn't leave their sight this time, I warned. Heads will roll if they lose her again. Whose heads? Yours, for starters. Is that a threat? He asked. No, I said calmly. It's a promise. Boston may fear you, Brennan, but I don't. Keep my missus safe or bear my wrath. There was a beat of silence in which I supposed Sam considered whether he wanted to go to war or simply bow out of the argument. Look, she doesn't seem to be venturing outside their house very often, he said finally. I think having people on the house at this point is excessive, almost counterproductive, because as it stands, only a handful of people know where she is. If there's surveillance on her ass, it may draw more attention. This surprised me. Belle was the kind of thrill-seeking woman to arrange a public orgy in the Vatican, and I couldn't imagine her parents' house offered many attractions. Nonetheless, it was good news. I was going to deal with her as soon as I got back to Boston, which should be within the next 24 hours. Fine. No surveillance. Hallelujah. It was terrible doing business with you. He hung up on my arse, wanker. I sat back in the leather seat and drummed my knee, taking London in as it zipped past my window. The congenital greyness, the oldness of a city which had braved wars, plagues, fires, terrorism, and even Boris Johnson as mayor. This is not a political statement, I simply found the man entirely too eccentric to be anything other than a party clown. I thought about how I'd left Louisa in Boston. Her tear-clogged throat, red eyes, and wilted posture. How I was never going to see her again, apologize to her again, explain myself again, and how I was completely fine with no longer hating myself for a decision I'd made when I was 18. I wasn't fair to her. But then my father wasn't fair to me. I'd spent my entire adult life trying to repent for what I did to her by depriving myself of things. It was time to let go. Show me a person with no wrongdoing in their past, and I'll show you a liar. Sir, the young man behind the wheel caught my eye through the rearview mirror. I turned my face to him, arching a brow. May I ask you something? He had an old-school Cockney accent, the kind I'd only heard in movies. Go ahead. How's Boston in comparison to home? I thought about the weather. Better. The underground system. The tea wasn't even half as reliable as the tube. The people, both were brash and held high no-bullshit standards. Culturally, London was superior. Culinary-wise, Boston was better. But at the end of the day, none of that mattered. Boston is home to me, I heard myself say. But London will always be my mistress. And it was right there and then that I realized home was where Emmabel Penrose was, and that I was in love with the maddening, infuriating, terribly unpredictable woman. That, in fact, Swevin had been more than a conquest, a game, something I wanted for myself simply because I knew I couldn't have it. She was the pinnacle, the end game. The one. And even if she didn't know any of that, she had to know that I loved her. I had to tell her. I suppose you could say I paid a surprise visit to my mother, not because she hadn't been expecting me, she had, but because I falsely indicated to her that I intended on making a pit stop in Surrey to visit an old friend. Anyone who knew me was also aware I hadn't kept in touch with anyone from my previous life. Mum didn't quite know me, so she bought into the story. Worse still, I didn't really know her anymore. But I was about to get a glimpse of the real her. I'd walk into Whitehall Court Castle unannounced and see what things looked like when they weren't putting on a show for me. I slapped the grand double doors open. Two frantic servants were at my heel, trying to physically stop me from entering the manor. Please, sir, she isn't expecting you. Mr. Whitehall, I beg you. My mansion, my business. I breezed in, my loafers clicking on the golden marble into the main drawing room. The beams above my head closed in on me like trees in a forest. Devin, Mum cried out, darting up from the 19th century Victorian French settee, a flute of champagne in her hand. I stopped dead at the entrance, taking the scene in front of me in. Hustling and bustling around her, servants were removing a Rembrandt van Rijn painting and expensive furniture from the room, item by item, to make it appear bare and scanty. Cecilia was perched in front of the winged piano, looking like a woman who not only wasn't on suicide watch, but would happily commit murder herself if it threatened to bite into her leisure time. She wore a Prada dress from this season, and next to her was the so-called bane of her existence, Drew, who seemed content playing with the locks of her blonde hair before I walked into the scene. Devin? I asked with a mocking expression. As I made my way to Mum, she put her champagne aside and was now pushing servants out of the room, shoveling them out into the vast hallway to cover for her indiscretions. She wanted me to think the house was empty, crumbling. that she was a step away from an empty fridge, she was so poor. Whatever happened to Devi? When the last of the servants were out the door, Mum threw herself at me, hugging me with a sob.
It's so good to see you. We weren't expecting you until dinner time. Is your friend in Surrey all right?
My friend in Surrey does not exist, so it is hard to tell, I drawled. Shrugging off her touch and sauntering toward the Regency bar cart, I poured myself a generous glass of brandy.
It's not what it looks like.
It was Cece's turn to stand up from the piano and rush toward me, her face flushed. She twisted the hem of her dress in her fists.
I mean, yes, it is what it looks like, in a way, I suppose, but we didn't want you to think our struggle is not real. We needed to give you a push.
I threw the brandy down my throat, pointing at my sister with the empty glass. Are you suicidal? I asked, point blank. She winced visibly.
No.
Have you ever been? She squirmed.
I had moments when I was depressed.
Welcome to life. It's a pile of shite. That's not what I asked.
No,
she admitted finally. I swung my gaze from her to her husband, who was scrambling up from the piano seat, wobbling over to us, still wearing silk pajamas that did no favors for his thighs. These were the people I'd worried about for the past 2 decades, the ones I'd been sending checks and letters to, the folks I'd agonized over. Drew, can I call you Drew? I asked with a winning smile. Well, I... Never mind, I was being polite. I am going to call you whatever the fuck I want to call you. Are you good to my sister, arsehole? I think so. He shifted uncomfortably from one foot to the other, looking around as if this was a test with a definite answer and he hadn't prepared for it. Have you ever held a job? I was a business consultant for a non-profit organization after I finished uni. Did you know anyone on the board? He winced. Does my dad count? I don't know, is the Queen English? Do you have a health issue keeping you from working? My stomach gets very upset when I'm nervous. Very well, work your way to a paycheck and you'll have no reason to be nervous. Next, I turned to look at my mother. By her cloudy expression, she gathered there were no happy announcements coming her way, nor confetti and venue shopping in her immediate future. You're not struggling, I said.
I will, if you don't marry Louisa.
Sell the valuables you own.
The family treasures? Her eyes widened.
Family treasures are supposed to be the relationships, laughter and support you get from one another, not paintings and statues. I suggest you start looking for a profitable job, or at the very least find out if you could go on the dole, because there is no way in hell I am marrying a woman who isn't Emma Bell Penrose. I was already cocked and loaded, ready to fight her over sending people to threaten Swevin. By the power of deduction, I wagered there was no way at least some of the things that happened to her weren't by my mother's order.
Please, I cannot even hear her name.
Mum covered her ears, shaking her head.
That woman ruined everything. Everything.
Is that why you sent people after her? I leaned against the wall, one hand tucked inside my front pocket.
Excuse me?
She slapped a hand against her chest. You heard what I said. We held each other's stare. Neither of us blinked. She spoke, still staring at me.
Cece? Drew? Leave.
They scurried away like rats abandoning ship. I cocked my head sideways, scanning the woman who brought me into this world, who stopped caring about me when I didn't shape my life around her vision of her own dreams. I wondered when, exactly, I'd become nothing but a tool for her. In my teens, college years, as a full adult. Who did you hire? I asked, frostily.
Stop being dramatic, Devi!
She tried laughing it off, picking up the champagne glass from the tray next to her, twisting it about.
It wasn't like that.
How was it, then?
Well, I suppose I did hire a man. His name is Rick. He said he collects debts and such. He has a few soldiers around Boston running errands for him. I just wanted him to scare her off, not harm her, God forbid. She is still carrying my grandchild, you know. I care about those things.
She cared about her first grandchild like I cared about preserving the life and dignity of treehopper bugs in Turkmenistan. Get him on the phone right now. I want to talk to him.
He won't talk to me.
She threw her hands in the air, walking over to the settee she'd occupied minutes ago. Taking out a thin cigarette from her purse, she lit up.
He stopped taking my calls. I've tried everything. Last time we spoke, he said someone got involved in the case. Some common Irish name. Said he doesn't need to deal with this guy. I haven't heard from him since.
Sam Brennan. Is he still on the case? I asked.
No.
Give me his details, just in case. I was going to give them to Sam and ensure Rick knew the next time he got close to Emmabelle, he was going to leave the situation in a body bag. Mum rolled her eyes, sticking her cigarette into her mouth and scribbling something on a side table by the settee. She tore the paper from a notepad and handed it over to me.
There. Happy now?
No. So he followed her?
Sent other people to do it a handful of times. One of them she confronted in quite an uncouth manner, to be honest.
And sent her letters? Mummy frowned, taking another drag of her cigarette, folding her arms over her chest.
No, I didn't ask him for that, and highly doubt he took such a liberty.
That meant there was someone else after Swevin, just like I suspected. A second someone. Frank, I needed to wrap this up and get back home. When did Rick start going after her? I wanted to know when it all began. Mum gave me a guilty look.
Well, before she got pregnant,
Mum admitted, her shoulders sagging as she puffed on her fag.
After your father passed away, I used Rick to try and see if there were any obstacles that might prevent you from marrying Louisa. He said you were all over this Penrose woman, so we tried to push her out of the picture.
Real classy.
Are we going to talk about what's going to happen to me and your sister now that you've officially decided to fail us?
She huffed.
Because this thing with Emmabelle wasn't unprovoked. You must see my point of view. You're about to flush the family's fortune down the drain to make a point about your father.
No, I'm about to flush the family's fortune down the drain because it comes attached with a stipulation no one should agree to. And also because I'm in love with someone else and refuse to sacrifice my own happiness so you and Cece can drive fancy cars and take monthly vacations in the Maldives.
Devon, be reasonable.
She snuffed the cigarette out, smoke still escaping her lips as she rushed toward me. She seemed to be trying tough love and groveling simultaneously, which made for quite the odd conversation.
You're burning down a legacy. All you'll be left with is the title.
I don't care much for the title either, I drawled.
How dare you?
She slammed her fist against my chest.
You're irrational and vindictive.
I've tried being reasonable. But there is no reasoning with you people. You're on your own, Ursula. If you want money, go earn it. Or better yet, find a sorry sod who is willing to marry you. And on that note, here's a fair warning. If you try to harm the mother of my child ever again, I'm going to end you. I mean that, literally. I will end your life as you know it. Spread this message to Cece and Drew, too. Oh, and my love, of course. Manners were manners, after all.
You can't do this to us.
She fell to her knees, hugging my ankles. The waterworks started. I stared down at the back of her head with a mixture of annoyance and disgust.
Please, Devon. Please marry, then divorce Louisa, just for a bit. I won't be able to survive. I simply won't.
I shook her touch off of me, stepping away from her embrace. If you don't, it's none of my business. You know, she looked up, her eyes shining with madness, anger, and desperation. They were so big, so manic, I thought they were going to pop out of their sockets.
I knew. That time when he locked you in the dumbwaiter and cut the electricity off so the pumps wouldn't work. We were both in on that.
Revulsion crept over my skin. My mother knew my father had tried to kill me all those years ago, and she was in on the plan. Our entire relationship, as I knew it, was a lie. She never cared for me. She had simply bided her time because she knew my father would die one day and wanted to be on my good side when she asked me to marry Louisa. I smiled coldly, stepping away from her. Consider the will unfulfilled. You're poor now, mother. Although really, you've been poor your entire life. Money means nothing in the grand scheme of things when you don't have any integrity. Spare us both the trouble and embarrassment and don't call me any more. From now on, I won't pick up.
Chapter 37. Belle. I felt like a rare bird. An explosion of colors, high heels, and outrageous bling as I dragged my faux crocodile suitcase behind me, slinking into my parents' suburban house. I could feel the neighbors' stares heating the nape of my back through their Roman blinds and sensitive shutters. I was sure there were plenty of things for a 30-year-old former party animal to do in the suburbs of Boston. Unfortunately, I had no idea what they were. Not that it mattered. I couldn't exactly dance my sorrows away at a roof party, drink to the point of distraction. What a buzzkill you are, baby Whitehall. Or even treat myself to a shopping spree that ended in the same way all shopping sprees should end, munching on an order of Wetzel's pretzels cheese dog bites while trying to balance 150 shopping bags, their handles digging into the flesh of my forearms. Wellesley was not known for its shopping malls and cultural landmarks. Or for anything, really, other than being close to Boston. But what depressed me the most was that I didn't even want to snort lines of coke with rock stars in public restrooms or sing Like a Virgin in a karaoke bar while my friends toppled over with gusto because I was anything but. I wanted lame, weird things like snuggling next to Devin on his freaking $8,000 couch. Of course I Google shopped it. What am I, an amateur? I wanted to watch his boring 4-hour-long documentaries about sustainable plastic bags and killer slugs. I was curled into myself on the guest room bed when my dad knocked on the door. Mom was out. She was now a part of the Ladies Who Lunch committee. The irony, of course, was that the ladies didn't lunch at all. They munched on dressing-free salads and discussed grave topics like the Doucans or the Zone diet. Guessed he wanted to see if we were still on talking terms. Were we?
Belly Bell, he sing-songed. I'm off to go fishing. How about you join your old man? Can't go wrong with fresh air and sweetened iced tea.
Pass, I murmured into my pillow.
Oh, come on, kiddo.
I admired his ability to pretend yesterday didn't happen and at the same time suck up to me because of yesterday. I'm busy today.
You don't look busy to me.
You know nothing about my life, Dad.
I know everything about your life, Belly Bell. I know about your club, about your dates, about your friends, about your fears. I know, for instance, that you are miserable right now, and it can't just be about me. You went a lifetime pretending it didn't happen. Something's eating you up. Let me help.
Thing was, he couldn't help. No one could help the lost cause that was Emmabel Penrose. The vixen who didn't care so much about sex after all, but about intimacy. I wanted to know what it felt like to belong to someone. But not just anyone, to a devilish, blue-eyed rake. Ugh!
Why are you so obsessed with me? I moaned, forcing myself off the bed and dragging my feet along the floor. I wrestled into a pair of Daisy Dukes, leaving them unbuttoned because of baby Whitehall, and threw on a baggy, ruffled white top. I didn't look ready for fishing anything that wasn't compliments about my killer legs, but here we were. The drive to Lake Waban passed in silence, punctuated by Dad asking questions about Devon, work, and Percy. I answered with the enthusiasm of a woman facing death row, and just as much liveliness. Once we arrived, he rented a boat, hurled all of his fishing gear into it, and rowed to the middle of the lake. On the boat, I complained about my early maternity leave from Madam Mayhem. Dad told me that work was a distraction from life, and that life wasn't a distraction from work, and that I had my priorities all wrong. It sounded like a botched inspirational quote by John Lennon, but he was trying so hard, I didn't scold him for it.
And besides, we need to meet this Devon guy.
Dad flipped his ball cap backward, trying to make me laugh to no avail. Why? I scrunched my nose. We're not together.
You will be.
Dad spun the fishing reel, tugging at it, while something in the water flipped about, trying to escape. I huffed, watching as he pulled the fish out. A silver, scaled, helpless-looking thing. Dad grabbed a fillet knife, cutting the fish's throat and letting it bleed into the water. The fish stopped flapping, succumbing to its destiny. Dad swathed the fish in plastic wrap and threw it into an ice-filled container. How do you know? I asked. He raised his eyebrows.
To fish?
No, that Devon and I will end up together. I shifted uncomfortably on the other side of the boat.
Oh, I just do.
That's not an answer.
Of course it is, honey.
He smiled at me, lovingly, handing me over the fillet knife and a pack of alcohol wipes to clean it.
And it's a good one, too.
About an hour into our fishing session, we bumped into one of Dad's new friends from town. Literally, our boat kissed his while he accidentally drifted in our direction. Dad immediately reached for me, making sure I didn't slip or get hurt. Then he laughed, his eyes lighting up.
Hey, Brian. John, I thought I'd seen you out here. The weather's too nice to pass up. Have you met my daughter?
The pride in Dad's voice was tangible, sending frissons of pleasure down my spine.
Can't say I have, ma'am.
Brian tipped his straw hat down. There was an introduction, followed by 30 minutes of fishing talk. I yawned, glancing around us. I understood that some people enjoyed nature and its peacefulness. Personally, I couldn't live anywhere where the air wasn't polluted and the crime wasn't at least a little bit out of control. I decided to finally turn my phone on and check my messages. I hadn't done that in days, though I used my parents' landline to call Percy, Ash, and Sailor. I scrolled through my phone when a message popped on my screen. It was fresh, from 20 minutes ago. Devon,
where are you?
It was time to face the music. Well, the screaming, really. Belle, fishing? Devon,
fishing?
Belle, yes? Devon,
is this code for something?
Belle, get your mind out of the gutter. Devon,
hey. You were the one to put it there in the first place.
Devon,
you have a lot to answer for, young lady.
Belle, ugh, call me young again. Someone just called me ma'am. Devon,
give me his details. I'll handle him.
Devon,
where are you fishing?
My eyes dragged up from the screen and I looked around me. Was the middle of nowhere a sufficient reply? Belle,
doesn't matter.
I'll come meet you. We need to talk. I was going to tell him that I'd made a terrible mistake, that I was sorry, that I was an idiot. There was a good chance I was going to say that twice. That I received and promptly burned the check Louisa had given me, and please, 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 could he take me back? I'd learned my lesson. Dad scarred me, and Mr. Locken gutted me, but apparently I still had a beating heart behind the heavy layers of facade, and that heart belonged to him. Devon, don't come. Bell, question mark? But he never replied. Don't come. No explanation, no nothing. So, of course I was going. I was going just to spite him. The bastard. I was going there right now. Well, maybe I'd put on something a little more dignified than a pair of Daisy Dukes I couldn't button and a shirt that screamed, I just spent the last few days with my best friends, Easy Cheese and Dancing with the Stars. Dad, I have to go. Dad and Brian conducted a short but meaningful conversation using their eyebrows alone, perplexed that someone would want to do anything other than sit idly in the middle of a huge blob of water and wait for fish to bite their baits.
Okay, honey. Let me wrap this up.
No, I'll go alone.
Are you sure?
He asked. There was no point in him joining me. I was changing my clothes and heading straight to Boston to demand Devon Whitehall allow me to come back to him and love me. Positive.
All right. You can take the car. Brian will give me a ride home.
Awesome. What a great guy. Not super great, since he called me ma'am, but not the worst either, I guess. Dad rode back to shore, tucked me into the driver's seat, and kissed my hair.
Stay safe, kiddo.
I bolted back to my parents' house. On my way there, I assured myself that everything would be okay. I would go straight to Devon and have my gun on me at all times. I would remain safe and maybe broach the subject of us moving somewhere else where half the population wasn't trying to kill me. When I got back to my parents, the first thing I did after double locking the door was toss my bag on a side table. I removed items of clothing as I made my way to the guest room, already deciding I was going to wear the emerald green mini dress that made my eyes and tits pop. Padding barefoot across the wooden floor, I stopped when I reached the threshold of the guest room. There was someone sitting on the edge of my bed. I jumped backward, resisting the urge to yelp and draw attention. Frank. Turning back on my heel, I raced down the stairway, heading back to the landing to fetch the gun inside my bag. He grabbed me around my shoulders and pulled me back. My feet were up in the air. My back slammed against his chest. He wrapped an arm around my neck in a chokehold and squeezed, cutting off my air supply. My fingers dug into his arm, clawing to get him to let go. I tried to scream, but all my mouth produced was a low, pained hiss. Baby Whitehall, I thought frantically. I have to save my baby. Putting my Krav Maga lessons to good use, I reached behind to try and get a hold of his opposite arm, but he was quicker, gathering my hands and squeezing them together behind my back.
I don't think so. You ruined my life. It's high time I ruin yours.
His breath skated over the side of my neck. It reeked of tobacco and sugary soda. I tried to sink my teeth into his arm, but he pulled back quickly, readjusting his grip on my neck with one arm and cradling my pregnant belly in the other.
Shh.
His teeth grazed the shell of my ear.
Don't make me do something I'll regret.
And then I felt it. The cold, sharp metal grazing the bottom of my belly. I froze like a statue, closed my eyes, the air rattling in my lungs. He was going to give me a premature C-section if I didn't do as he said. Baby Whitehall fluttered in my belly excitedly, awake and aware of the commotion. I'm sorry, Baby Whitehall. I'm so, so, so sorry.
Are you going to be a good girl?
Frank's breath fanned against the side of my neck. I nodded, the bitter taste of bile exploding in my mouth. My mother wasn't due to be home for another 2 hours, and Dad could spend the entire day at the lake. Percy wouldn't drop by without letting us know first. I was officially, completely, and royally screwed.
Now we're talking.
Frank shoved me forward, making me stumble down the first stair. We went down the stairs silently, my knees bumping together with fear. He sat me down in front of the fireplace, grabbed a roll of heavy-duty tape from the back of his jeans, and taped my wrists and feet so I was immobile on the couch. He ripped the shirt off my body, the fabric slicing through my skin, leaving red marks in its wake. I was wearing nothing but my underwear and bra.
Stay here.
He wiggled his index finger in my face, then proceeded to stomp around the house, barricading the doors. He didn't have to do more than push a few chairs against the front and backyard doors. Dad had a "the enemy is upon us" mentality and made the house World War proof. I knew there was no way in and no way out of this place without dismantling him first. Frank tossed the keys I'd used to double lock the door into his pocket, moving toward one of the windows, rapping it with his knuckles.
"Triple glazed,"
he whistled, raising his eyebrows and nodding at me approvingly.
"Nicely done, John Penrose. Those are expensive as fuck."
He knew my dad's name. I bet the bastard knew a lot about my life since he'd found out I was here. I scanned my surroundings. It was time to get creative. The only way out for me was through the central air ductwork. It was big enough for me to fit, but I'd still have to tear down the vent, which was basically impossible since my hands and legs were bound. Frank's eyes traveled to the same air vent I was looking at. He chuckled.
"Don't even think about it. Now, let's talk."